Welcome to the Bigger Room Podcast. I'm your host, Mel Cobian.
And I'm Jill Bender. And today we're going to talk about seven growth tips to hit seven figures. So let's start this episode with... Oh, this is a really good one. I think this is the best one for us at this time. And it is, play the long game, not the short game. And the reason that I say it's the best one right now is because last year we saw a tremendous amount of success in a very short amount of time. And we had one goal, and it was to do one thing to make a bunch of money. But I think now that we are in the beginning of this year and we've had a lot of pivoting moments in our career, I think... For me, I would have liked to maybe set a better foundation for my business. And so I think a lot of people, they jump on to, you know, whatever that big thing is for them that they think they can make a lot of money, and they're just going to go with it right away, and they're not really going to think about long term. Like, okay, it'll be fine. As long as I can hit these six figures, or as long as I can make my extra 5K a month, or whatever their goal is. But the problem is that they didn't really lay any bricks. And if you don't have a good structure and you don't have anything good in place, if something falls, like the whole thing's crumbling and you don't really have anything to fall back on. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they're not taking the time to build a foundation, get to become a student. So this happens with nutrition and fitness plans all the time. People, you know, want that shortcut to success, but it's really, you eat every single day. You move every single day. So, you know, you have to learn the habits that are going to help you and aid you for the rest of your life. So same thing with, you know, buying courses. If you're buying a course and you're actually not completing it, like taking it to 100%, and now inside of our community, I can actually see when somebody is taking the lessons. So I know what students are actually, you know, students and what students are not taking the time to learn the craft. And there's a parallel with the amount of questions that they ask, because mm-hmm. they're, again, not judging, but just reminding people that you have to be in this for the long term, which means you have to be a student no matter what your goals are.
Yeah. I can also, you can see it. I mean, you can see in the back office of what you're talking about right now. Yeah. You can actually see who's doing what. But I think because we've worked with enough students, we can definitely see just from what they're asking and what they're doing. Like, I have somebody that I thought was going to be the one that was just going to take action, and they were just going to really, really, really get good content out and get everything. And now it's been, I think we're coming up to a month since she's joined this program and she's in my mastermind group. And I look at her content and I'm like, have you looked at a single training video? Because everything you're doing is not even close to what's taught, like not even close. Like, you are just throwing spaghetti at the wall right now, because this is not the results of actually doing something. So really, with playing the long game, not the short game, you want to make sure you're making a good choice. Is this something that's just sustainable? And I think a lot of creators, like when I first started, there were a handful of creators that I watched online every day. They were the ones that were pumping me up, like, oh my God, I could do this. Oh my God, I could do this. And now, after I started really getting into it, a lot of them I wasn't seeing anymore. I'm like, well, where did they go? Now that I've been doing this for quite a long time, I feel like it's a long time, I think they just got burnt out, and I don't know what they're doing now, because I haven't taken any time to look for them. But either they had something they set up that was going to hold them through long term, or they pivoted, hopefully, to something that they could build, you know, separate. Or they fizzled out and they couldn't handle it. And then now they're not doing anything. I mean, obviously there's any of those options could be the one, but yeah. So I would say set yourself up for long term. Is the option you're choosing, is that going to be the thing you can do for the next 5, 10, 15 years? And if it's not, but you know it could be like a catalyst to,
yeah,
you know that that's going to maybe jumpstart you in the right direction. Just don't get caught up in it and have that be the only thing, I guess, is what I want to say. Don't let that just be that one thing. So build that up, but also remember to lay some other bricks so you have a sturdy foundation that's going to last you long term. Okay. I think we killed that one.
Yes.
And even went on a... All right, Val, you're going to like this one. The number two is create space. And now what that means is give yourself some time to really like think and really reflect and get out of everything for just some amount of time. So like maybe as you're going through, maybe decide like every Monday morning for 2 hours, I'm going to just be away from my desk, away from my house, away from everything, and either sit and think, or I don't know if you'd want to work out for 2 full hours, but go sit at a park, just reflect on everything that you have, maybe think of how your next week's going to go, that, you know, that week that you're rolling into, but give yourself some time. And when you do that, you'll find that your creative juices start to flow. So it's not that you're trying to just like clear your head of anything. It's now you're able to think, because not everything is clogging up, you know, your brain with all of these have to do, have to do, have to do. Like how many times have you been in the shower? You're like, oh yeah, that's such a great idea. Oh my God. Yeah. Like, why do I think of this stuff in the shower? I have nowhere to write it down. And we think of it in the shower because we're not being hit with all of the distractions or anybody that needs something from us. Or any, you know, our computer, our emails, our businesses.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about some podcast episode that I heard the other day, and it was talking about how we're conditioned to work a 9-to-5. That's what the school system does. I mean, think back to when you had a class after class after class, you got a little bit of a break, then a class and a class, you know, lunch, whatever. And by the time you got home, you weren't really motivated to do anything. If you were in sports, you pretty much just lounged the rest of the day. And that's what adults still do. They go to work a 9-to-5, they come home, and they pretty much have to lounge for, you know, 3 hours, do what they can if they have kids. So you really don't have the opportunity to be creative. You don't. So every successful entrepreneur, they find the time. If it's 5 minutes, it's 5 minutes. If it's 10, find your time to just disconnect. Don't be on your phone. Just tap into the gratitude and just be. And every single successful entrepreneur talks about that. That's what they do in the morning. They meditate. They just have their alone time. And people, I think, are also scared, Jill, of being alone, like being alone with their thoughts.
Yeah.
There was like a psychological or like a sociology experiment where they asked people if they wanted to be alone. I think it was like for 15 minutes or get shocked. And everybody just chose to get shocked, which was just weird because people don't like being alone. But you have to be able to.
Yeah. If you want to have some of those creative thoughts, that's going to be your best time to come up with them.
They definitely happen in the shower a lot for me. I will be showering like, that's a good business idea. I should do that. And then I, like, the moment I walk out of the portal, the shower, I forget.
Right. Yeah. So number three is read more. You talk to anybody who is super, super successful, especially like seven-figure earners, business owners, they all read books. Not like the back of the toothpaste bottle, shampoo bottle. We're talking read books. And if fiction is your thing, I do challenge you to pick up a nonfiction, something that could you could learn from that can inspire you. And one of the books that I would recommend that I think was a super easy read, and it will open up your eyes to possibilities that you didn't know existed, is The 4-Hour Workweek. And I think of that right now because I just had that book sitting out here. And I read that one a long time ago, but it really does open up your eyes to possibilities. And like I think we talked about this on the podcast with Ruth. It's like stuff we didn't know was even obtainable. And you'll get that out of that book. But even if you read fiction, just read, because fiction prompts ideas also in your head. And so it's another way to collectively start building that creative thought process to move you forward. Do you want to touch on that, Mel?
I love reading so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I wish I could do that all day. And when you listen to successful entrepreneurs, they talk about the books that changed their life. And there are so many books that changed my life. And then you stop and think, Joe, why is it that books are so life-changing? And the secrets are in the books. Apparently, right, I could get a little cuckoo here. There's hidden libraries and these hidden books. For example, the first edition of Think and Grow Rich was so powerful, if you read it correctly, that they had to pull it off the shelves and rewrite the book because there was some secret words. Yeah, yeah. You guys should Google that. But because you know how powerful the mind is, you know how powerful the thoughts are and how you basically hold your life, right? And they had to rewrite the book and take some words out because it was too powerful.
That is super interesting. And
it is, but it's just a reminder that, you know, books are super powerful and there's a lot of secrets in them. But every time you reread a book, you're also a different person. Like that 4-Hour Work Week, if you read it again today, you're probably going to take a lot more from it now because of the stuff you have accomplished.
Absolutely. Even Think and Grow Rich. Like, I would love to reread that one, but there's just so many other books I want to read.
I started rereading The Seller Be Sold by Grant Cardone. I actually started reading it today again. Yeah.
I started it two nights ago. Audio though.
Yeah. Well, I did too, because of my walks. Yeah, so I'm gonna pick up again when I go for a walk tonight.
But I don't remember completing that book. So I think I might have listened to it for a little bit and then I switched 10X Your Bent or 10X 10X Your Life or whatever it's called. But I don't know if I ever made it through Sell or Be Sold, but again, it's going to be way different to me now than it was when I did read it. Guys, we would love some feedback. I did want to do an episode. I've been doing some research on it, and I want to give you guys, you know, like, we want to give you the top 10 books that you should read if you want to be a 7-figure earner. And, like, we can come up with our 10, but if there's one that you know that really needs to be on the list or that you really loved or you want to suggest to us that we should read, we would love to hear it. So send us a message on Instagram at The Bigger Room, or if you're part of our newsletter, send us a email at, what is the email? Sorry. Send an email to suggestions@tbrpodcast.com. So let's continue with tip number 4. Spend more time with high performers.
Oh, gosh.
Go ahead, Mel. You look like you got something.
I am the worst at this. I've always been this way since I was a little kid, though.
You look for the losers?
No, it's not that. Like, I definitely had a huge group of friends growing up, but I've always been a smart kid. Like, I won a lot of trophies, like academic pentathlons. I was in the math bowl. Ooh, yeah, I was a freaking nerd. but everyone around me was a troublemaker. So then I would do stuff and that got me in trouble. I got suspended. I got expelled twice, not once, but twice. And I realized that it was like the perfect sociology experiment where you have a kid that's bright, but because of their surroundings, they do dumb stuff they probably would have never done if they weren't in that environment. So obviously, I don't judge myself with about what the things that I did, but I kind of just, it's like a huge kind of interesting looking back. But now, if a person doesn't inspire me or motivate me, which is the circle that I have now, it's almost, it sounds horrible to say. It sounds horrible to say out loud, but it really is kind of like, what do we do for each other? If it's just drinking and partying, like that's not what I do. Whereas if it's like, you inspire me, I want to be around you. And I know that a lot of successful people view their circle that way, but I just feel kind of bad saying it.
Well, this might make you feel better. And by the way, I do want to mention that this episode was inspired by the Graham Cochrane podcast. This is where this whole thing stemmed from. So what Graham says is that you should have three groups. You should have your peer group. And as we know, our peer group is who we're hanging out with, who we enjoy, you know, spending the time with. You should have a group that's not quite as far along as you. So someone that you can kind of bring up behind you and mentor, teach what you've been learning. And then, of course, like you said, a group of high performers. And this ties right into the name of our podcast, The Bigger Room. If you're only hanging out with that first group or that second group, you need to get a new group. You need to find that bigger room of people that you're going to grow with and learn from and, you know, strive to be better in all aspects.
There's this guy named Luke Belmar. He says the same thing. He says, well, like not groups, but he says the same thing, that you need to have a mentor and then you need to have somebody you can mentor. And I feel fulfilled with my community because I get to mentor people. So I feel like that satisfies the group of, because it's like our little tiny family, and they definitely satisfy the and I would rather hang out with them than, you know, go out with some older friends and go party. Like, I would rather hang out with them because they want to better than their lives, and I'm a little bit ahead of them. Yeah. So that motivates me, that fires me up. So I feel like I have that group of people that I can help. And then I have, you know, you and everybody else that continues to, you know, fire me up. But like older friends, I don't even talk to anymore, really. yeah.
Well, I have always really enjoyed hanging out with kids. And I know part of it is because I inspire them to want to do better things. And it's kind of just always been my nature. Even when I was not even successful or anything, I would have parents that would say, why are you a teacher? Like, look at these kids just follow you around. I was like the little Pied Piper, and all the kids would get up and come after me. And I know I've made a difference in several of these kids' lives. And even when I see them now and they're adults and they come over and they're like, you know, they'll say things that they really looked up to when they were younger. And they're like, well, I only did that because that's what you used to do. Or, you know, and so I love having that impact on them. And then it's the same thing. But yeah, with our groups, and now that we're at a higher place in our business and we can help others, it's so satisfying, and it helps us grow because we're taking that knowledge that we've learned and we're passing it on and teaching it, and it makes us not only remember it, but you learn it better when you can teach it.
That, and it's almost like you're kind of held accountable, right? Because it's like, I gotta make sure that I know what I'm doing, or I gotta make sure I keep learning so that I pass more stuff around.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
The two-way street.
Yeah, for sure. Number five is spend more time with your top customers, not your bottom feeders. we know these very well. These are the people, they're coming in with 1,000 questions. They haven't even bought shit from you, and they probably never will. They're just going to suck your time and suck your energy, and it's not going to do anything to help you grow. So put more effort and time into the people that you know truly are implementing. They really, really want to get better, and that's where you want to put your focus with. So if you have, you know, 100 customers and 80% of them are sucking the life out of you, and you're not gaining anything from this, it's just draining you. It's going to burn you out. The top customers, give them your more of your time and efforts.
Yeah. And also, if that's happening a lot to you, you need to charge more, because there's this meme, and it's like the $300 client where that's like texting you 24/7, expecting you to, like, you know, answer them whenever they want. And then you have the $10,000 client that pays you. And then all of a sudden, those are the more independent people. They barely text you. They only text you when they need you, because they're just more driven. And sometimes that's how you weed out the people that drain your energy, is you charge more. The truth is that you cannot help everyone. And these multimillionaires, these billionaires, how much do you think they charge for their time? They're charging like $72,000 for a consultation. And you can get there too, but you need to increase your value. And in order to increase your value, you got to value your time. So
absolutely,
charge more. If people are draining
charge, you need to charge more.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, and they'll go away.
They will. I did that with my fitness business. And I only attracted super high successful millionaire clients, because fitness is something that's like very sensitive for a lot of people and very consuming energetically speaking. So I was like, I want to work with people who are committed. So same thing, charge more.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Number 6. I love this one. I think this one's my favorite one. It is prune your offers. So you have to be willing to kill off things for better things. So let's say you started, you know, like we both have masterminds, but let's say, like, we love our masterminds. I think we definitely love helping the people that are in them and everything. But let's say some of these other things that we're building have the potential to help us grow, not only financially, but to grow more in our business. Maybe it's something we enjoy doing more, then we would kill off the mastermind, even if we didn't want to. Even if it was bringing in a good income for us and it was making it worth it, if it can open up space to have something better come along, be willing to kill it off. Don't marry into anything that you create. You have to be willing to let some dollars go in order to grow.
Oh boy, have I been doing a lot of that lately. And it has opened a lot of doors, and I feel a lot better. And I noticed something that was kind of tough for me to swallow not too long ago from a business coach. What they told me was, when you sign yourself up to do a lot, to serve a lot, it's because it can be probably an insecurity that you may have by trying to over-deliver. But trying to over-deliver, you now don't have the energy. And I'm like, I need to trust people when they tell me that I'm helping them and that, you know, that I'm doing a good job. And I need to hold on to that and just let go of trying to just serve everybody every time they have a question. That's a strength of mine, but also a weakness, you know? So
yeah, that makes sense.
Bring your offers, you have to cut off the stuff that's just straining you and it's not worth it.
Yeah. And a good example, I haven't looked this up yet, but I heard there's a book, and I think they said it was called The Pumpkin Plant. And he talks about this theory, and he said, like, for people that are into gardening, you'll understand this especially, but if you look at, you know, a tree that grows fruit or some kind of vegetable, and let's say it's shooting out a bunch of little ones, But if you prune off those little ones, even if they're good little ones, you prune them off so you can let a few of them grow really big and beautiful. And now you have a much better product because that tree is able to nurture those more than it could have if it had, you know, like 150 pieces of fruit. So it's another way to look at it.
Yeah. Basically, have your undivided attention to what's, you know, serving you and you're serving people at the same time.
All right, let's get into tip number 7. Don't play it safe. Once you have success and you have... Okay, so don't play it safe. Yes, we can go on and on about people not even starting. Like, we've talked about that many times on this podcast. People play it safe and they don't even get started and then they never do anything. But this is more for people who have seen success. Maybe they hit 6 figures like we have, and then they get more scared because now they have a bigger pot, a bigger amount to lose. And then they start holding on to it like, oh, I don't want to make that mistake because all this money I finally just got, what if I lose it? So then they stop taking risks. But if you don't take risks and try new things, you are not getting anywhere. You are going to be stuck and most likely your business is going to die off. You have to be willing to take some even bigger risks. Bigger risk, bigger reward.
Not starting is a risk. And I don't think people realize that. So I always tell people, like, what is the worst case scenario? Staying exactly where you are, in my opinion, is a bigger risk.
Way bigger.
Yeah. Because the only thing you'll know is that you're not going to get to where you need to go. That's the only thing that's guaranteed if you don't take a risk. So basically stay where you are, which is comfortable. If you're not taking a risk, you're comfortable. And that's totally fine. Every successful entrepreneur took a risk. And they would do it again. I know. Would you take a risk? Would you take the same risk today?
Yeah, absolutely. And now I know, like, get that skin in the game, take those risks, take even bigger risks. So I had a really good example. Steve Jobs, he came out with the iPod. And that was revolutionary, right? We had CDs, there were digital downloads, but there was nothing where you could actually buy the music and have it in that same spot that you just purchased it from, and it could be instant. And now you have this music all in one spot, and you can walk around with it, and you can put it in your pocket, and you can go jogging with it. And I remember having, like, the little iPod holder strapped to my arm so I could go biking. And why would he kill that, right? He made billions of dollars off of selling these iPods, and like the iPod 2 and the iPod 4 and then the, like, shuffle. I don't remember which one I had. The shuffle. I had a shuffle. No, I never had a shuffle, but I had this really cute one that was out for like one season where it was square. It was this cute little square. It was the beautiful green and I loved it so much, but it was like, it was out and I bought it and then there was never any more of those again. But then they had the iPod Touch, like, and it looked like your iPhone, right? Yeah. But it wasn't a phone. And so what he did was, instead of staying comfortable, like, wow, we have this insane product that, like, we just revolutionized the entire music industry and, you know, like, all these possibilities. He came out with a product that directly killed this billion-dollar product, and he invented the iPhone. And now you had a phone and the same instrument that you're walking around with your music, and you could, now you had one thing. Now you didn't have to have an iPod and a phone. Now you've had it all on one. And so, yes, was it going to be a risk because it was killing the product that made so much money? I think it was worth the risk, obviously, and I'm sure he knew that. But you take risks, and it's how you're going to grow. And sometimes things are going to work, and sometimes they're not going to work. And sometimes it's going to hurt. But as long as you're willing to take new risks and new chances and pivot and grow, you're gonna find that thing that is going to work.
Yeah, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. It's just part of the game. That's it for this one, guys. If you found this episode helpful, please leave us a review. It really helps get other people to listen to the Bigger Room podcast. We'll see you in the next one.